Welcome to the Tech Savvy Professor Podcast, two faculty who love tech and love making it part of their work. I'm Marty Gensius, an associate professor at Kent State University.
And I'm Eric Perry, clinical faculty at Southern New Hampshire University.
Eric, I guess every season could very well be conference season, but for our profession in counselor education, we've got a big conference coming up. I know you've got a conflict with that, with a job situation or scenario that you've got to go to. Was a residency for your group?
Yeah. So I'm teaching in New Hampshire that week. Mm-hmm.
And I'll be heading out to Denver for the conference. And the question is, we talked about travel tech in a previous episode. And if you want to know about our travel tech, listen to that episode. But this is more about what software and how do you use technology when you're at the conference. And so let's start off with the big one. Conferences is a large demand on your mobile equipment. So you have to think about what software will I be using from a mobile standpoint. I mean, you can carry around your laptop and that'll work fine too, but most folks are trying to look more mobile. The big thing with every conference is the conference program app. There's the good, the bad, and the ugly. What sort of are your experiences with conference apps?
So trauma, I'll start there. I think it's been, I was involved in conference planning for several years and truthfully have been out of it for some time, for which I'm thankful for. But there's so many out there that you're going to run into. If you throw conference management software into Google, you're going to get hundreds of results. For some companies, it's like an offshoot of whatever they do for event planning. So, I've had some experience with Event Pro, Eventbrite, Open Water, Capterra, done a little bit with that, and Cvent, to name a few. And, they're always, like you mentioned, there's these weird quirks that go along with some of these systems and their apps.
Yeah. It's, I have been had been dragged in to working with conference apps, starting with smaller associations and trying to figure out a way to be able to put a schedule up that people could access on mobile devices. And then there are larger conferences that my only experience has really been around Cvent and the Cvent app. And it's pretty tedious. Once it's set up and you've got some expertise sitting behind it, you can figure out how to make changes in the program when programs drop out, make announcements through the app and things like that. It's all very doable, but it's a clumsy app. And it is also from a user end, you've got a bunch of people who are not app savvy, and you've got maybe 1,000 to 1,500 people all trying to figure out how to use the app. And in some cases, all trying to access the app, most cases at the same time, which puts a demand on the app server and what it can provide. So you see a lot of situations where apps can kind of ground to a halt in the middle of a conference. And then there's a lot of crisis around that. People can't find out where things are. I think the movement has been, let's get away from, and I think it's great, let's get away from the green, printing all the conference programs, because they become obsolete anyways, the day of the conference when things and changes occur, to get it all sort of on a mobile app. But then you run into these structural problems.
Well, and I have some unsolicited advice for that, right? Which I guess is the platform for the show anyway. Keep a downloaded copy in PDF if it's available for your conference program on your phone. Internet connectivity can be an issue in these conference spaces as well. Sometimes it's only offered in large common spaces, and that can cause issues with the app. So you want to make sure that you have access to the schedule somewhere. Pay attention to the signage that's out there. There may be schedules posted. There'll be, signage on some of the rooms, hopefully. And a lot of that is digital now. You'll see TVs in the conference spaces that will scroll those schedules at some of the larger conferences. So be prepared for what happens when the app just doesn't work the way you want it to. And things come up, changes happen, stuff gets moved. And like you mentioned, sometimes those announcements come through in the app, but if the app's not connected, it's not going to receive the information. So you may miss some of those. I remember having backup sessions for, you know, some things that just to make sure I would have somewhere to go to. And it sounds silly, but almost like an amusement park, it's good to know the layout, right? Where are your sessions going to be? Where can you walk through to find additional things? So as much as we're talking about integrating technology like apps and that making things easier, you almost have to kind of paper and pencil, so to speak, a little bit of your backup plan, because there are these issues that pop up.
Yeah, and hopefully the conference will have that PDF available for you to use. I know sometimes they produce them because there are still old school folks who want to have printed copies of things. But I think conferences are moving away from that, becoming more dependent on the app. As you mentioned earlier, the apps are often integrated into a whole conference package. So you buy the proposal acceptance package, you buy the proposal review package, and the app is sort of an afterpiece of that that becomes part of it. But there are risks at using that. I'm going to make a plug for an app that I used. If you're working with an association and all you need is a good app for scheduling and bookmarking, what folks want to do when they go through that long list of presentations is they want to bookmark those, the sessions they're going to be going to, so they don't have to page through the whole app to go back to whatever they thought. I always wind up with those important sessions, particularly ones that I'm presenting at or ones that I really want to be at. I stick them in my calendar. So they're part of my daily calendar that, so it takes a little bit more effort. It's a prep piece that I do when I'm ready to go to a conference, but at least I know I can always go to my calendar to the must-have meetings I need to be at or sessions I want to attend. The app I want to make a plug for is Sched, SCHED.com or Sched.org. It is a web-based program, an agenda sort of app that conference planners can purchase very cheaply. Because it's web-based, it doesn't carry all the app sort of stuff, heaviness that an app does in terms of running. You know, you do have to have internet access to have access to it, but it's really easy to page down and just bookmark what sessions you want, and then you could go to the tab and just look at the bookmarked sessions that you want. I've used it with a couple of smaller divisions or regional conferences, and have used it in the past for large association conferences too. It was a startup. It was a young group of folks who said, we just want to do a good scheduling conference kind of app, independent of all the other stuff that conference apps or conference providers can do. This is their focus, and they have been great with support. You have to either put in the sessions manually, or they have a template where you can put all the information, like an Excel sheet, essentially, and upload it, and it automatically populates the schedule that folks will use. So I've always loved it, always worked well, never ran into the problems with it that we see with large conference planning apps.
Yeah, and I mean, something I wanted to mention too, and Marty, you can chime in on the Apple part, but a lot of the comments I get from people about using web-based stuff is they don't want to pull up the browser, they want to pull up the bookmarks, and then there's easier ways, especially on Android. You can make that an icon.
Yeah.
So you can make that website an icon on your phone to just click, and it will take you to that page. So even if there isn't an app available and it is web-based, you can access it quickly if you don't like opening your browser.
Yeah, and you can do the same thing. It's send a home page, and it creates a small app. I always find it ironic that when people set that up, they never put their own branding on it. No. And that's part of the setup with the app. So instead, you've got the company who's created the app's branding on it instead of the association that's using the app for that purpose. But yeah, you can do that do that with Apple. And I typically do that when using web-based conference apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely makes accessing easier.
So when you're at a conference, how do you communicate with other people? What's your process if you communicate with other people?
That's a good point. It definitely is a touch point for faculty and for peers and colleagues you don't normally see. You know, there's faculty that I met at conferences and just have talked to at conferences and tend to see at conferences. We don't tend to talk much in between or might have an email or a project here or there. You know, and truthfully, a lot of that interaction in person for me is important. So I tend to seek that out. I tend to use a lot of text to communicate with folks that are there. And I'll notice when conference season gets close for us, I'll start getting the text, hey, are you going? Where do you want to meet up? What do you want to do? So that tends to be how I connect with folks while I'm there.
Yeah, I would love to do more creative ways than just text messages, because there's that dreaded Android Apple blue versus green bubble, and sometimes things don't get sent when you send messages off. I would encourage folks to use WhatsApp and just create a WhatsApp group if you want to, or just share things through WhatsApp, which is seamless across both platforms. It's an app most folks are familiar with. I created a cigar smokers group for one conference, and you know, found out people who were interested, added them to that group on WhatsApp, and we use that as a way to message if we were going to go out and where there are places to go out. So I'd look at alternatives than just like Facebook Messenger or just simple iMessage or whatever message system you're using on Android, and try to go to a universal platform if you can. It just makes it easier, makes it a little bit more seamless.
I haven't used it for this, but Slack is another good option.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's a great app. But then with everybody, there's kind of a learning curve. And that's the same thing with WhatsApp. It's for some folks, it's still a learning curve. But Slack would be great for that, too, in terms of private channels and such. And you're not going to, you know, with Slack, you have to start paying for it. If you want to have a history and you want to do all that it'll keep anything for 90 days. We don't need anything like this kind of communication for 90 days on the free version of it. So, it's a perfectly viable way, good way to do it. And I guess you could create a conference, thread specific to it, and people could join Slack that way if they wanted to do that in terms of communicating with folks. How do you take notes during conferences? I always have trouble with this.
There is no comfortable way that I've found to take notes. I tried a couple of different things. I took a tablet one year and tried to write with a stylus on the tablet and hold it, which was actually a little bit more comfortable, I think, than paper and pen sort of notes. But it's just, you know, you're in a seat in an aisle of people watching this presentation.
The chairs are locked together for us wide bottom people. It makes it like a chair and a half.
And it's much, much like sitting in an airplane, right? A lot of the experience is similar. I saw a lot of folks the last conference I went to taking notes on their phones, which was interesting because I don't know if from the presenter's perspective, they knew that was happening. But being able to see other people's phones, because it kind of looked like they were texting or they weren't paying attention, but a lot of people were actually taking notes in the notes app on their phone. So I noticed a lot of that happening. And I thought, well, as a presenter, I might be kind of concerned I was boring them, right?
I'm not good at notes on phones. If it's like a phone number or something I need to save, I'll use the notes app from Apple, because it then migrates to everything that I use in terms of every device. I like to have a keyboard, but the problem is I also have a sloping lap, I think is the kindest way to say it. And there's not much knee space. And then suddenly the thing is at an angle. This conference coming up, I actually went and ordered a clamshell keyboard for my iPad. And I'm going to try that out instead of taking my laptop around with the same, which, you know, would provide me the same issues. But I'm going to try that out because it's lighter, it's smaller, and I can can move that around and see how that works in terms of note taking. Meals.
Probably my favorite part of the conference experience, I think, is the meals. And we tend to eat out a lot because, again, tend to see people that haven't seen in a long time and want to get together for dinner. But I also have that I need to recharge time too.
Mm-hmm.
And something I thought was crazy to me was that people didn't know who had DoorDash, that they could use it in whatever city they were in.
Yeah.
So like you can have food delivered to your hotel if you have Dash Pass or something like that, just the same way you would at home. It's not an additional fee or charge or anything. You just can order food from whatever's around there. So if you need that recharge time, I really like that you can use DoorDash for that. And I was surprised at how many people didn't know that. They just assumed they could only use it at home.
Well, I had a conference where I arrived later in the evening, sort of post most people's dinner times, or at least setting up dinner times. And I wound up using DoorDash, and I switched the location because DoorDash is set up for me to default to my home. I switched the location to the conference hotel that I was staying in. I placed my order, and then I noticed another order coming up for Five Guys Burgers and Fries being delivered to my location. And I got on the messaging and I asked Aileen, I said, did you just order something from Five Guys? She had neglected to change the location back to Kent, Ohio. So I had not only my required Asian food coming to my hotel room, but I also had Five Guys Burgers and Fries. Actually, what I did was get on the phone with the guy who was delivering it and explain to them, my wife ordered this from Kent, Ohio. Find somebody on the street that looks like they need a meal and go ahead and give them the meal, because I certainly am not going to eat it and we don't want to throw it out and we've already paid for it. So find good use for it. So you got to be careful when you do use DoorDash to make sure you're not sending your meals to your home without changing the address. I've used, and you've been with me, we've used OpenTable when we were wandering around trying to find places to eat and deciding to go back to a place that we had been to previous nights and going to OpenTable, getting a table, and by the time we made it over there, our table was ready. So that's another app that I think in terms of out of town or in conferences you want to look at. Uber and Lyft for transportation. I don't use Lyft that much. I have it, but I just don't use it that much. Uber seems to work for me pretty well. Again, you have to have location settings changed on that in order for it to be effective, so you're not sending a cab to your home or an Uber to your home, I should say.
Well, and be careful with city taxis.
Yeah.
That can be very expensive. It's not very upfront about their pricing. It's one of the nice things about Uber. You generally know about what you're going to pay in taking that ride. Whereas with taxis, it can really vary. And some of them have flat rate costs that they start with. And you know, they can get really, really expensive, especially in larger cities where those taxi companies can be unionized and, you know, those costs can get high.
If Uber is in an international city, I had an experience with it in Istanbul, where I started using Uber consistently because there are real problems with cab drivers taking advantage of travelers. And it was a kind of set opportunity with Uber to not have that happen. But I was in the one case I decided I just needed to jump into a cab and get back to a hotel rather quickly. I got taken for a ride, literally, and a large cost. And I know enough about Istanbul to know you don't have to cross the river to get back to the other side of the river. And I really literally got taken for a ride. They dropped me off out far enough away from the hotel so security cameras couldn't capture the plate. They were very good at that, and I paid a lot more for a cab ride instead of that. So, yeah, you've got to be careful about city cabs. Unfortunately, they have, they're out there trying to make a living too, but there's some nefarious stuff going on. Other apps that you use at conferences?
You know, not a ton that I can think of. I think, you know, like you said, you lean a lot into that conference app for kind of your day to day. And then the apps that you use, like Uber and OpenTable, the types of stuff you need for the evenings and socializing and those types of things. I think the other one is your airline apps.
Yeah.
Really making sure that you have those and you can get notifications on your flight and status and those types of things when you're traveling.
Yeah, I paid the extra to get TripIt Pro, and that has served me well over the years. And it gives me all the updated information that I need. Of course, I have it synced to my phone and synced to my watch. And so I get stuff on my watch, you know, as I need the information. It tells you what gate you're coming into, tells you where your luggage is going to be at in terms of what turnstile. I'm sure there's other ways to get that directly through your flight apps if you want to use those, but I've just set it up all through TripIt. Hotel, everything goes in there in terms of information, and I have it shared with my wife, so Aileen can always go in and find out, where did he go this week? What's the hotel that I can get a hold of him at? So, yeah. Power banks. This is something I added in as a question. Do you use power banks when you travel to conferences? Because conferences can be an all-day battery drain.
I do. And I'm going to suggest it as a whole show topic at some point in the future. But there's a couple of things that you have to watch out for, especially now. I tend to take a larger power bank because the Chromebook I have too, I can charge USB-C and I can use that power bank for that as well as my phone. So you can use it to charge whatever devices you need to, provided it has the ports that you need. So a lot of these updated connections, they're still selling these kind of outdated formats to get rid of these old power banks really, really cheap. Now, if you have, you want to get a good deal, and you have adapters or, you know, some way to make that work, just know that, you know, your charge time could be impacted. The level of power you get can be impacted. But there's tons and tons of options out there. So I bring a large power bank with me. It's heavy, but I can charge four devices. It's USB-C compatible. So I have all the connections I need there. Another thing that I found that folks were using that I just can't get my head around because it makes your phone's so unwieldy are the cases that include an additional power bank. So those are an option, but your phone then becomes this brick that you have to carry around all the time as opposed to just plugging it in. The other thing that I actually really liked and a friend gave me was a power bank that slides into my Swiss backpack, and there's a place for the cord to come out. So it stays in the backpack. I have the cord attached and I just plug my phone into the backpack. I don't ever have to take the thing out of the bag. So it makes it much, much easier to carry around and to charge at least my one device.
Yeah, I used to use, we can do a whole thing on different kinds of power banks and how they work. I used to, you know, there was the expense of getting a new phone every year. And then there was the expense of getting a power bank for the one or two times I'm going to use it at a conference. And generally I got the Mophie packs, which were really good, and you slid your phone into it, and then it turned it really into a weapon because of the additional weight. But the thing was, I'd find out if I used it without the power bank, by the end of the day with a new phone, I would be down to 30%, you know, so, and I didn't need to carry around a brick with me for that purpose. So I've stopped buying them because the devices I use manage to maintain their charge throughout the day. And my goal is to walk around with the least amount of stuff in my hands that I have to carry with me. If I can avoid, unless I'm presenting and I need to have a messenger bag with all that tech in it, I'd prefer to walk around with the least amount of stuff just so I'm not dealing with a lot of clutter and a lot of things hanging off my shoulder. So I found power banks have become less useful for me because I've always got an opportunity somewhere in the conference, even if it's downtime for me to plug in something. And my habit is to plug something in whenever I've got a place to plug it in. But I don't folks who are slave to battery loss and have older devices where it runs out. I think power banks are essential, but that's not my ecosystem because I upgrade every year for things and the batteries last me for as long as I need them for a conference.
Well, I think, like you said, some of these devices are real power hogs, especially if your battery settings are you know, leaning into that performance as opposed to battery life. And a lot of them have gotten better. A lot of the newer devices have gotten much, much better. But just to give an example, I go fishing in Canada every year with my uncles and my dad. It's a family trip. And he brought along a solar wireless charger so that we could charge our phones wirelessly on the boat. And it worked fantastic because I streamed music. There was no whatever. And it just attached. There's so many ways to power your devices. And I was so skeptical at first. I was like, this is not gonna be helpful. But I would get off the boat from fishing all day, streaming music and, you know, calling the kids or whatever from the water, having it switch between networks and international, which drains your battery, and, you know, having nearly a full battery at the end of the day. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I kickstarted into one of those early on when they were first coming out, and it took forever to get here. And then I realized we don't get enough sun in Kent, Ohio for it to make much of a difference.
Yeah, fair point.
It's a great place to be, but, you know, we have those clouds that come south from the lake effect. Not the snow, not the rain, just the clouds. And so we struggle with sunny days as you would get in other parts of the country. So, yeah, I tried that and, you know, thought these are really cool. But at that time, they didn't have the bang for the buck yet. And so it's good to hear that you've had some success with those solar powered. I don't think you could walk around one in a conference, though. I don't think it would do you much good.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about next show, probably podcast, and we'll talk about equipment in a first episode, and then we'll talk about software in a second episode. And this is because there was some faculty discussion that you had with your faculty about podcasts and people wanting to create podcasts. And that could be a three show, actually. You got equipment, you've got software to do it, and then you have platforms on which to do it, to share it with. And trying to keep these shows to around 20 minutes. We sometimes go a little longer, sometimes go a little shorter. So we will try to chunk that up for folks who are interested in podcasting, whether it's academic or just kind of personal. How can listeners get involved? You've got a tech question, trying to figure out how to do something with technology, or have an idea to share? Email us at thepodtalknetwork@gmail.com or call and leave a message at 330-333-1240, and we'll play your question in the podcast and try and get an answer to you. Our bumper music is from Philip Gross, Rast, from the Free Music Archive. That's it for today's show. Thanks for subscribing to the Tech Savvy Professor podcast. Everything you need to know is at techsavvyprofessor.net. You can find us by searching Apple Podcasts for the Tech Savvy Professor. Look for us on Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play Music, and look for our other shows like Circular Firing Squad on thepodtalk.net. Thanks for listening to the Tech Savvy Professor.